Live from the Zionsville Performing Arts Center, the first Indiana gubernatorial debate, sponsored by the Indiana Debate Commission.
Good evening, and welcome to the Indiana Debate Commission's first gubernatorial debate of this fall season. I'm Dennis Ryerson, the retired editor of the Indianapolis Star, and I'll be your moderator tonight. And for the next hour, the three men on stage with me will answer questions of Indiana voters. For the first time in one of our debates, we're going to mix it up a little. So in a nod to the Lincoln-Douglas approach to debating, the candidates will debate statements each of them make to the others. We're broadcasting this debate live on radio and television stations throughout Indiana and on live web streams on many websites. Also, C-SPAN is carrying this debate. We'd like to thank our wonderful hosts at Zionsville Community Schools and the Zionsville community at large. Our broadcast production partners from WFYI, WTHR, and WRTV, our affiliate organization, and our volunteers are also wonderful partners for making this possible. Now, a few words about the format and the rules. Keeping with the Debate Commission's mission and tradition of putting voters first, voters will ask many of the questions tonight either in person or via emailed questions that I will ask on their behalf. Each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the questions and will have probably 30 seconds for rebuttal time. We may have to adjust these a little bit given our broadcast time constraints, but we'll try and keep it on time. I'm going to be pretty particular about that. Midway through the debate, we will, as I said, change gears a little bit, and we'll ask each of the candidates to make a statement in a traditional style. Now, you won't have to say resolved or any of that kind of formal stuff, but the idea is to make a 1 minute statement about your beliefs. Then the other two candidates get 2 minutes each to rebut that statement. And then the first candidate will have a chance to wrap it up for a minute, and then we'll move on, and the cycle will repeat itself. We'll then go back to voter questions, and when we get to the last one, it'll be general in nature, and each of you will get 90 seconds to answer that question and then wrap things up from your perspective. So that's the format. Here are some of the rules. First, I will keep us on time. It's really important that we do so. That may mean that I have to respectfully stop one of you from speaking in mid-sentence. I apologize in advance for that, but we will keep it on time. We've already spoken to our live audience and reminded them of the rules of decorum here. No partisan signs, buttons, clothing, or other such displays. No clapping, whistling, or other noise making. We're doing this to make sure that you have ample opportunity to hear from three men who want to serve you as governor. The candidates can take notes, but they can't bring pre-written notes or props to the stage. Now, they drew lots to determine where they stand on the stage and the order in which they'll make their opening statements and answer their first question. To my right is John Gregg, the Democratic Party candidate. Next to him, Rupert Bonham, the Libertarian Party candidate. And the third candidate, Mike Pence, the Republican candidate. Gentlemen, welcome. It's time for your 1 minute opening statements. We begin with John Gregg.
Thank you. I'm John Gregg. This election's about jobs, education, and bipartisanship. I bought the soda shop in Sanborn when I was 15 years old. I created my first job. I understand how to make a payroll. As former president of Vincennes University, I know all the opportunities in the world don't mean a thing unless we've got a well-educated and well-trained workforce. And I'm glad that I've always been able to get people to work together. And when I was Speaker of the House, every single bill that landed on the governor's desk had bipartisan support. So if you love this state like I do, I'd like to ask you to look beyond the party labels. And if you're tired of the gridlock in Washington, D.C., look beyond those labels. I'm the only candidate who's balanced Indiana's budget. improved funding for Indiana schools, cut taxes for Hoosiers, and done so in a bipartisan way.
Thank you, Mr. Gregg. Mr. Bonham.
Thank you. And thank you to the Indiana Debate Commission for hosting this debate. To the Zionsville Performing Arts Center, it's an honor to be up here on stage. Thank you to all of you out in the audience and everyone watching at home. I appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say. I have, for my entire life, tried to empower the people around me. I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana. For the last 20 plus years, I've been living here in Indianapolis. Back in 91, I created my mentoring program with no city, state, federal funding, no government dollars, no grant dollars. I have been running my small businesses here for years. I have been putting people to work in situations that they have never been working in before. I have shown people how to get themselves out of trouble and back to work, to empower people. I want to stand up here as a change to what the status quo is. I am definitely that change.
Thank you, Mr. Bonham. Mike Pence, your opening remarks.
Thank you, Dennis. I want to thank the Indiana Debate Commission and my fellow competitors and all those that are here tonight in Zionsville and looking in from around the state of Indiana for this opportunity. I'm running for governor for really two reasons. Number one is I love this state. I'm a lifelong Hoosier. I grew up in Columbus, Indiana, in a large family, a lot of whom are here today, along with my wife, Karen, and two of her kids. I went down to Hanover College and studied American history, worked a few years, and then came up to Indianapolis to go to law school. Throughout that time, I've been the president of a state-based think tank. I started my own business, in which I had the opportunity to syndicate a broadcast around the state of Indiana, and had the chance to represent Indiana over the last 12 years in our nation's capital. The highest honor of my life would be serving the state as governor. But I'm running because I believe Indiana's on the verge of an era of growth and opportunity. And if we produce a plan, which I have in my roadmap for Indiana, I think we can take Indiana from good to great.
Thank you. You know, it's fitting. We're meeting at the Center for Performing Arts in Zionsville, which is on the campus of the Zionsville High School. So it's fitting that the first question deals with the theme of education. And we have with us Andy Curl. He's a skilled tradesman retiree from Indianapolis. He's joining us on stage. Andy, welcome, and please ask your question.
Looking at the historic performance on the SAT and spending over the last 30 years, the same assumptions should apply to an entire student population, yet that's not the case. From 1980 to 2007, the amount of spending per student has risen nearly fourfold to approximately $10,000. During that time, verbal scores of both females and males remain steady, and math scores gain only 20 points. With this in mind, what changes would you propose to improve the educational outcome for the state of Indiana's children without additional expenditures?
Andy, thank you very, very much. Mr. Gregg, you get the first response. You have a minute.
Thank you very much. Andy, I understand as a former university president that when our students graduate from high school, they should be career or college ready. But one thing that I would do different is the day I'm governor, I would end the war on public education and public educators. I don't think we improve public education by scapegoating teachers and principals, and I'd be more inclusive in my reforms. And when I'm governor, I would have those reformers sitting there, but I'd have some of those great educators and principals and the school superintendents and a board member. They're called local schools for a reason. And the one thing we would do is we would look at a pre-kindergarten program. We're one of eight states that does nothing about pre-kindergarten. And I am the only candidate running for governor that has proposed early childhood development programs. It's time we do this. It will prepare our students, and every dollar spent on pre-childhood saves $7 in the course of that child's education.
Thank you very, very much. Mr. Bonham?
Education is very important. You know, half of our budget goes to education, yet we're still struggling. When we've got our teachers tied to teaching to a test, when we're grading our students on the performance of one test instead of the progress through the year, it's an injustice to our teachers and our students. Not every one of us tests the same. We need to bring vocational education back to our schools. Industrial arts, home arts, life skills. We need to start creating an environment in our schools that if a child is not on an education path for college, they're on a path for vocational training and still being given that chance to have a solid life with education. We need to end the I-STEP, we need to empower our classrooms, and we need to redirect some of the dollars out of the administration into the classrooms.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pence?
Andy, thank you for the question. And other than public safety, there's nothing that the state of Indiana does that's more important than educating our kids. And we've made great progress in recent years, despite the fact that, to your point, Andy, that funding has been level in the last few years. Graduation rates are up. Test scores are up. But we've got a long way to go. The reality is, in the recent grading of schools around Indiana, some 20% of our schools got a failing grade, and 50% got a grade of C or lower. And we've got to do better. I think there's nothing that ails education in Indiana that can't be fixed if we give parents more choices and teachers more freedom to teach. And I want to agree with both of my competitors up here on stage and say that in addition to the aspects of our roadmap for Indiana that call for greater emphasis on math and reading, I think the time has come to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school in Indiana again. And in my roadmap for Indiana, we lay out a plan to do just that.
Thank you very much. All right, 30-second rebuttals, beginning with Mr. Gregg.
You know, any changes that are going to be implemented have to be implemented in the classroom. That's why it's important we have input from the classroom teachers. I've worked for two Fortune 500 companies, and you cannot implement change from the top down. The best ideas don't come out of Washington, D.C., and they don't come out of Indianapolis. They come from the supper tables in Zionsville and Elkhart and Evansville. We need to be more inclusive. We need to listen to teachers, but we also need to expect results.
Mr. Bonham.
I still have to go back to so much emphasis on the standardized testing, teaching our children to pick the best of four answers instead of teaching them how to write the essay. Life is not a multiple choice. Life is an essay. And we need to teach our children how to think and learn and comprehend. We can untie our teachers' hands if we move away from the standardized testing and empower our classrooms.
Thank you. Mr. Pence.
In my roadmap for Indiana, which you can take a look at roadmapforindiana.com, we specifically set goals to improve math and reading skills of our elementary students and increase our graduation rates. We do that by placing greater emphasis on math and reading, considering the possibility of a gateway expectation at some point in elementary school for math. Laying a foundation in STEM education is a key to our success. But I want to say again, I think the time has come to make sure our kids, as John said, are college and career ready when they graduate.
Thank you. Bobby Craig is an office manager from Osgood, and she couldn't be with us tonight, but she also has a question about education. How do you propose to make state college tuition more affordable for families that will have children going 10 years from now, besides their saving in a 529 plan? How do you propose to cut down on college debt and provide useful skills when the kids graduate from college? Mr. Bonham, a minute.
You know, making continuing education affordable. In our state, you know, when I see so many people coming up to me saying that they're struggling with their first year of school because they have to take so many remedial classes before they can take their first year of college. And that is costing. That is taking time away from your college education to go back and redo what you should have learned in high school.
Thank you. Mr. Pence?
You know, we've got three kids. Two are at college right now. So the Pence family knows just a little bit about college tuition and the cost of schools and the burden it places on families. That's why in our roadmap for Indiana, we came up with a plan to create an incentive for on-time completion at our publicly supported universities. The reality is today that less than a third of our students actually are finishing a four-year degree in 4 years. And I think we have to do better than that. And I particularly want to praise Indiana University in this regard today. We woke up today to a headline that Indiana University is now creating an incentive program. At the end of the sophomore year, Indiana University will freeze tuition for students who are on track for on-time completion. This falls in the category of exactly the right idea. I think we need to give an incentive to our universities and to our students to complete school on time. A four-year degree is, by definition, more affordable than a five-year degree.
Thank you.
May I say that you stopped me before my minute was done?
That's fair.
Yes, sir. You stopped me at 30 seconds.
All right. Would you like 30 seconds more?
Yes, I would.
Take it.
You know, being able to show how we can create a more affordable college, streamlining what we are doing, coming up with some new ideas. That is why I am running for governor. I want to bring some common sense in. Why aren't we putting more of our books on electronic readers? Why aren't we creating more classes through the internet and using our teachers and our 21st century to help educate our children? We've got to come up with some better ways to actually be more cost effective in our schools.
All right, thank you.
My experience as the president at Vincennes University, and I'd be remiss if I didn't give a tip of the hat to current Governor Daniels and the late Governor O'Bannon, because between both of them, they have seen to it that college is accessible all over Indiana through the Ivy Tech system, the community college system, our regional colleges. College is accessible. Our challenge is to keep it affordable. I enjoyed going up to Ball State University, where President Gora showed me how necessity being the mother of invention, they're looking at their physical plant being all geothermal. People from all 50 states have come to see that. They've been thinking outside the box. I think it's time we take a second look and we realize that building new buildings maybe isn't always the thing to do. And it's time that we have a serious discussion about considering a freeze on tuition. I also think it's time we need to audit the university so we can track where our state tax dollars go. Because right now when they go there, we've got no way to follow them through the system.
All right, thank you. Let's move on to the next question. We're already a little over, so we'll skip the rebuttals on this one. We may have some rebuttals later, but let's move on to the next one. And we have with us Brett Rash. He's a social worker from Fishers. And Brett, welcome, and ask your question, please.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. Do you feel mental health services plays a role along with the educational system?
All right. Mr. Pence, your minute.
Well, I think there's no question that the mental health services with regards to our kids and families plays a role in educational outcomes. And it's one of the reasons why I think we need to continue to promote innovation and reform in Indiana in our schools. Hoosier should be proud of the fact, Brett, that right now Indiana is in the lead in education reform in this country. And we're starting to see the results of that. And we're starting to see that the outcomes at our school are improving. Graduation rates are up. Test scores are up. But I think we need to continue a relentless pursuit of staying in the lead in education reform and bringing all the resources, whether they be mental health or whether it be promoting early intervention programs like the Youth Assistance Program here in Hamilton County, where you bring mentors and adults from private organizations and faith-based organizations together. So teachers have a place to refer kids that are starting on the wrong path.
Mr. Gregg.
Thank you. I'd like to say something on the last one since I didn't know we weren't going to have our rebuttal. But the whole idea of the congressman's roadmap and rewarding students getting through college in 4 years is great. But it's not great for the students that are non-traditional students. It's not great for the students that have to work full time. It's not great for the students that are juggling two careers. I worked full time and got a law degree, worked full time and got a master's degree. Many people don't have the luxury of going to school full time. Concerning mental health, I've been involved before as an attorney in our mental health center in Knox County at the Vincennes Hospital. I can tell you that the number of people that are homeless, the number of people that commit crimes, they're suffering from mental health issues is much higher than the general population. Sadly, in Indiana today, we have cut the money that has gone to mental health. We've cut the money that has gone to the Department of Children's Services that provide counseling to students dealing with mental health issues. We need to make that a priority.
Time. All right. Mr. Pence, would you care for 30 seconds?
Excuse me.
Okay. Rupert, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Boner.
No, that's okay. I've been forgotten a few times.
The moderator needs a timer.
Yes, I'm kind of getting used to it, but that's what happens to a third party.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, mental health in our education. Yes, mental health is very important to me. I started my career in running my mentoring program down in Texas in the mental health facilities. In our education system. And I want to say, Brett, thank you for being that social worker, giving back to our community and helping fight for those that sometimes struggle is a great thing to do. The mental health issues in our educational system, we have to figure out how we can create a system that puts as much emphasis on being self-sufficient and quality of life as it does on anything else, and use our public schools to help some of our Hoosier population become self-sufficient and not worry so much about some of the smaller details, but actually empower our mental health patients.
Thank you. Mr. Pence, would you care to rebut? 30 seconds.
Well, let me, rather than rebutting, let me agree a bit with what Speaker Gregg said earlier. I worked my way through law school too, and we were actually in law school together around that time, I remember, John. And I think he makes a valid point that for non-traditional students, people that are going to school part-time, we need to look at making college more affordable. But a good place to start on reducing the cost of schools is to help our kids finish their degrees on time, two-year degrees, four-year degrees, okay, in the time that they're attributed to.
Mr. Gregg.
The whole issue of mental health that we've discussed about here is just part of the growing concern we have that when Indiana brags about having a surplus, but the truth is the surplus has really come from cuts. $300 million have been cut from higher education. $600 million has been cut from our public schools. $200 million was returned to the Department of Children's Services. It's not been from a growing economy, it's been from cuts. And there's people and there's Hoosiers that are hurting because of those cuts.
Thank you. Mr. Bonham.
One of the reasons why I'm running for governor is exactly what is going on right now. I want to pull that curtain back and expose what is happening. The only way that we're going to be able to really fix problems is by seeing where the dollars are going, how it is spent, by using some common sense and actually creating a scenario that will empower us. In our educational system, we have to fight for every one of us.
Thank you. Okay, now we begin a new segment, the modern update on the tradition of the Lincoln-Douglas debates. If our candidates, if you stay true to the spirit of this, then I'll stay out of the way and let you talk. Each candidate will make a statement. The other two can then rebut that statement. Then the person making the original statement will have a minute to kind of bring things to a close. We'll begin with Mr. Gregg, your one-minute opener.
Thank you, Dennis. I love this state. I've lived here all my life. I'm raising my two sons who are with me here tonight here, and I don't want to live anywhere else. As I've traveled around Indiana for the last 22 months, I've seen opportunities in agriculture, advanced manufacturing, logistics, life sciences, and energy. Why, we could change the very way we feed the world right here in Indiana. And if items are going to be made in the United States, let's manufacture them here in Indiana. And energy, no state competes with us in energy. Why, in the South, we've got coal, methane, and natural gas, and in the North, we've got wind. And because of our agricultural energy, or because of our agricultural business, we've got the opportunities in all 92 counties. I've got a plan that'll create jobs. We do it by targeting tax cuts to Indiana businesses headquartered here, research and development, and manufacturing. And as governor, I will grow our economy, improve our schools, strengthen the middle class, in a bipartisan way.
All right. 2 minutes, Mr. Bonham.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we're talking about growing our economy, about bringing jobs back to Indiana, about making Indiana strong. You know, the best way that we're going to bring jobs back, start creating that predictable government, creating that fair and level playing field for all business, restructuring how maybe we look at our tax collections and our business taxes. Maybe start looking at decreasing our business taxes and creating a scenario where we are the lowest in the business taxes in the Midwest. Empowerment of our small businesses, empowerment of our youth coming out of schools, if we want to really make Indiana stronger. And what I have heard as going across the state, we want to stay here, we want to work, but we have restrictions put in front of us. We have to create a scenario where when you want to go to work, there is a job and the ability to do that. If you do not have the education, we better start helping. If we just start pushing our problems off to the side, if we keep filling our detention centers, if we keep just helping the biggest of the big boys, those box stores, those, and eliminating the ability for a fair and level playing field, we're all going to struggle. You know, being able to give Indiana back that ability to go to work, that's what I want to try and do for Indiana. I am going to stand up and show how we have put hundreds of people to work, how we are bringing back industry to Indiana, how we are going to empower this state and carry us into the future.
Thank you. Mr. Pence, 2 minutes.
As I've traveled around the state of Indiana for the last year and a half, there's no question. The next governor of Indiana needs to make job creation job one. And to do that, we've laid out in our Roadmap for Indiana, which is available at roadmapforindiana.com right now, a several part plan that is built first on fiscal integrity, then on putting taxpayers first, and then on building on the foundation of education reforms that we've advanced in recent years. So let me describe it to you. First, everything begins with integrity. And in public life, everything begins with fiscal integrity. Right now, Indiana, it should be commended for more than a $2 billion in our reserves and a record budget surplus. I think we should take the first dollar of that budget surplus and use it to strengthen our reserves, to make sure that Indiana, having become the fiscal envy of the country, does not fall back and lose those top credit ratings that we enjoy today. But right after we ensure that we've got the right amount of money in the bank to ensure against difficult times ahead, I think we ought to return those dollars in our budget surplus to taxpayers. I'm proposing in our Roadmap for Indiana an across-the-board cut in personal income tax of 10%. That'll put hundreds of dollars in the pockets of average Hoosiers. It's also the most effective way to cut taxes on job creators and small business owners. About 90% of enterprises in this state file as individuals. And it'll make Indiana the lowest tax state in the Midwest when we do it. We add to that a freeze in regulation and a look back to make sure we've got the most pro-business regulatory environment country, and then we focus again on making sure we have the best educated and best skilled workforce in America. That's how we make Indiana the state that works.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gregg.
You know, I hear the congressman talk about his roadmap for Indiana, and I hope the reality of it is, Congressman, that as I've seen you as a good-looking guy riding around in that red pickup, I hope that you're putting in there that you didn't support the auto industry. Two American companies, Chrysler and General Motors. There were 125,000 jobs at stake in the state of Indiana when it came time to loan money to the automobile industry. As a free trader, you have voted and decimated the steel industry, but you're talking about a roadmap to create jobs, yet your ideology has led to Indiana losing hundreds and thousands of jobs. Just a dozen years ago, Anderson, Indiana had 22,000 automotive jobs, and today they have none. I don't know where that roadmap leads, but I know where that roadmap has been, and it's not been for Indiana workers, it's not been for the auto or the steel industry.
Thank you. Now a statement from Mr. Bonham, you have a minute.
You know, one of my key topics, criminal justice reform. You know, I've worked for years keeping us safe, making sure people that break the law are punished, but working at trying to empower those of us that have stumbled a little bit. You know, when we stamp a felony on a 15, 20-year-old young man or woman, for the rest of their life, they are discriminated against in housing and employment. A felony sounds terrible, but a lot of times that felony, they were hurting themselves. We need to restructure the way we are dealing with our criminal population. And instead of spending $50,000, $60,000 or more locking people up, figuring out different ways to actually bring them back to being a productive member of society.
Mr. Pence, 2 minutes.
Well, I want to congratulate Rupert for raising an issue of enormous consequence. I said it at the outset of this debate that education was the most important issue other than public safety. I'm proud to have been endorsed by the Indiana State Police Alliance and the Indianapolis FOP. And I've served for many years on the Judiciary Committee on Capitol Hill and worked with criminal justice issues at the federal level. My ambition for Indiana would really be twofold. I want Indiana to be the worst place in America to commit a serious crime. But to your point, Rupert, I want Indiana to be the best place in America after you've done your time to get a second chance. I worked with the late Julia Carson on the Second Chance Act. It was legislation that she worked tirelessly to advance in the Congress. And it was about creating transition programs for felons who wanted to turn over a new leaf and start anew in life. And with 4,000 felons returning from our prisons to our capital city here in Indianapolis alone, I think we've got to do better. If I have the great privilege of serving as governor, again, let me say, I want Indiana to be the worst place in America to commit a serious crime. I want people with ill intentions to drive around this state. But I also want to say, after you've done your time, if you're ready to start over, I want to work with law enforcement. I want to work with prosecutors. I want to bring people together in the faith-based community, and community leaders all over the state to say, how do we create pathways for those men and women who've made mistakes early in their life to choose a better path and to lead productive lives in Indiana?
Thank you. Mr. Gregg, 2 minutes.
Thank you. When we're talking about job opportunities, and Rupert was, I want to share with you, as I've traveled around the state, these opportunities that I've talked about in advanced manufacturing, agriculture, logistics, energy, and life sciences. They are so interwoven. When I travel the state of Indiana, and if I'm going up to Muncie, or if I'm going up to Anderson, or going up north to the region, and I see the wind turbines, this fascinates me. I just don't see the opportunity to create alternative energy. I see the opportunity to grow our economy. I ask myself why those wind turbines, over 85% of them, are made overseas. I ask myself why that aluminum blade comes shipped here rather than being made at Alcoa in Boonville or Lafayette. That pole that holds it up, in my vernacular, it ain't no Georgia pine. And I wonder why it's not made out of steel made in Indiana, and why the hub isn't cast at a foundry in LaPorte, and why the wire didn't come from the old Essex plant in Fort Wayne. We can do that when we work together and don't get distracted on issues that divide us. We make rail in this state at Fort Wayne. We make the rail cars in Muncie, Indiana. We make those ginormous diesel engines in Columbus and soon to be in Seymour, but yet we've got no rail policy. As governor, I'll bring us together. I've done this as Speaker of the House, and I'll bring us together in a bipartisan fashion. I'm proud of my record as speaker in having brought both sides together. I'm the only candidate that has experience in doing that. I've balanced our budget, I've improved funding for education, and I've cut Hoosiers taxes, and I've always done so in a bipartisan way. We in Indiana need to stay away from divisive issues. We can't even agree on class basketball and time zones. So let's leave these other issues alone, okay?
Mr. Bonham, a minute to kind of wrap things up on this issue.
Right. You know, when we put those first-time offenders or nonviolent offenders in a violent jail cell, it does nothing but create a violent prisoner. When we have someone that is hurting themselves and we put them in jail for an extended period of time trying to teach them how not to hurt themselves, and they can get the same thing in jail, there's a problem. When we have somebody hurting another and back out on the street within days, sometimes hours, I want to keep us safe by using our prisons for violent prisoners. I will create those work programs for those ones of us that are hurting themselves and empower them. Check out our website and what we've been doing. Rupert for Governor, it tells all about our programs.
Thank you. Mike Pence, you've got a minute to introduce your topic, so take it away.
Thank you, Dennis. You know, I said earlier that I think integrity is where everything starts. And in public institutions, fiscal integrity is everything. And Hoosier should be proud. Over the last 8 years, under the stewardship of Governor Mitch Daniels, Indiana has managed to honestly balance budgets and reverse what was a condition that found Indiana essentially bankrupt. When Governor Daniels stepped into office, Indiana had a deficit of $840 million. And at the same time, we owed $700 million to other governing units through a variety of tactics like delaying payments to schools and our public universities. My question to my colleagues on the stage is, how do we avoid the mistakes of the past that allowed Indiana to go so deep in the red? How do we ensure that the next administration in the next 4 to 8 years produce honestly balanced budgets and preserve the fiscal integrity of the state of Indiana?
Mr. Gregg, 2 minutes.
The first way we do it, Congressman, is that we have bipartisan control of government. Bipartisan control of government's essential. We'll have a Republican House and Senate and a Democrat governor. So I like your idea. I gotta tell you that. I always get kind of a kick. The congressman and I have known each other for years, and he's a fine person, but we disagree on many things. And there's candidate Mike Pence, and there's Congressman Mike Pence. Talking about the Judiciary Committee, but Congressman, you missed 86% of the votes. You've never passed a piece of legislation in your 12 years in Congress, and you invoke Governor Daniels' name. To kind of take a parody on a former Hoosier, I know Mitch Daniels. Mitch Daniels is a friend of mine, but Mitch Daniels shows up to work every day, and he's there. And you're talking about Indiana and our financial situation, yet when you were in Congress and your party was in control and President Bush was in office, you voted 5 times to raise the debt ceiling. You talk bipartisanship, but you've always been the lead tack dog on people in my party. You know, the candidate and the congressman, they're two different people. You gotta look beyond that rhetoric. You gotta look beyond the record. Look beyond the roadmap. For 12 years in Congress, nothing passed, poor attendance record, and nothing but the lead warrior in the attack on women. That's all he's been about. And that's why I keep bringing up social issues, because that's what we're gonna go back to. We don't need to be focused on divisive issues. We don't need to be focusing on Girl Scouts and what kind of license plates. We need to be pulling Indiana together in a bipartisan way and taking advantage of our opportunities.
Thank you. Mr. Bonham, 2 minutes.
Thank you. Fiscal responsibility. I want to create that in our government in that tripartisan way with libertarians, Democrats, and Republicans, showing how we all work together and become a little more fiscally responsible, pulling that curtain back, like I say, and exposing what's going on in our government. Being able to show how we're going to be fiscally responsible. Let's start with some of this misplaced dollars or found money. One of the things that I've been seeing as I've been doing this run for the governor is that there is a lot of confusion in what really is going on with our dollars. You know, one of the best ways that I can see to empower our counties and give the power back to all of us is to start creating a different way that we collect our taxes. Stop collecting them and letting the money trickle down to the counties, but let the counties collect the taxes and hold that money, knowing where their budget will be for next year, collecting that interest on next year's dollars. Not having to borrow money in high interest loans or high interest bonds to provide services. You know, if we want fiscal responsibility, we can become more responsible. We have to bring some common sense into our government. You know, I've watched us centralize our government over the last 8 years. And it, on paper, it sounds like it should save money. It's added layers of government. I want to decentralize, put the powers back in the counties, back in the communities. When we make our county strong, our state will be strong.
Thank you, Mr. Pence. 1 minute to wrap up this topic.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate Rupert addressing my statement.
You're welcome.
And John, you're not sounding very much like yourself these days. I've known you for a long time. Showing up for work bit, you know I have a 95% attendance record in the Congress. You know I've been named as one of the hardest working members of Congress. And maybe the reason why you didn't answer the question about fiscal responsibility is because for 5 of the 6 years that you were Speaker of the House, Indiana ran deficits. According to public records at the State Budget Agency, for 5 of the 6 years that you led the Indiana State General Assembly, we ran deficits in the tens of millions of dollars. Just talking about bipartisanship is not going to be good enough. It's going to be about having a plan. And my roadmap for Indiana is about putting fiscal responsibility first, being willing to make the hard choices, and being straight with the people about Indiana about what that'll take.
Okay, thank you very, very much. We'll now get back to questions from voters. Michelle McGuire is here. Excuse me, she's an insurance agent from Anderson. Michelle, welcome. Please ask your question.
Good evening, candidates. I would like to know what each candidate's position is on the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and if they plan on implementing it in as governor. Please be specific. Thank you.
John Gregg, 1 minute.
Thank you. Thank you. Governor Daniels needs to be given a compliment for inviting myself and my running mate, the extremely talented State Senator Vi Simpson, to sit down with him and discuss that. He gave us 70 pages of material, and the first thing I asked the governor, I said, will this law be repealed? And he gestured with his hand that way and said, no. Obamacare is the law of the land, like it or not. And as a governor, sometimes you have to make decisions you just as soon not deal with. The truth of the matter is, if we start with the governor's CHIP program, we only have to add one more thing, maternal health care coverage. Health care is a right, it's not a luxury. The other items with it, we have to pick between which way we're going to go in this insurance pool. And I said the hybrid way, based on what we knew, because we control it. My opponent, the congressman, said he believes in freedom. That's not an answer. That means the federal government will control our decision. In our plan,
time.
It'll be a hybrid between the state and federal.
Mr. Bonham.
The Affordable Care Act is here. The it's been deemed constitutional. It's coming. We cannot plan on it being repealed. If we do that, we are going to be forced into having a decision being made for us. I did change my position on this a little bit. When it first came out months ago, I said Indiana should stand up and take care of itself. Of course we should stand up and take care of ourselves. But with the government, the federal government, pushing us to hundreds of thousands, maybe 750,000 new people, we better create that situation that the federal government still has some skin in the game. Check out rupertforgovernor.com. I've got a 5-page report that I sent to the governor talking about our plan and our recommendations. We have to keep some control, but we can't let the federal government off the hook.
Thank you. Mr. Pence, 1 minute.
Obamacare must be repealed. I oppose it strongly as a member of Congress, and I continue to hold that view. It erodes the freedom of every Hoosier by ordering Hoosiers to buy health insurance whether they want it or need it or not. It raises taxes on every Hoosier and every business as a result. It will result in an increase in the cost of health insurance premiums, according to independent estimates and analysis. And it's already cost jobs in Indiana, as a major manufacturer announced as a result of the medical device tax included in Obamacare that they would not be expanding jobs in the Hoosier state. So I'll continue to stand for electing a president and electing a Senate and a Congress that will repeal Obamacare. But in the meantime, whether Indiana should implement a state exchange is a profound question. I believe we should not. It's a deeply flawed bureaucracy. And my competitor's idea about a hybrid exchange, quite frankly, my experience is the federal government usually partners with states the way an alligator partners with a duck.
We need to move on. Thank you.
We won't be winners in the hybrid. We'll be losers, and it'll cost Indiana $50 million with very little gain.
Mr. Bronum.
Oh, wait. Excuse me. Is this my rebuttal? Is this my 30-second rebuttal, or is this?
Let's move on,
okay,
because we're really tight. We're about 6 minutes behind, so we need to have more questions. Michael Moody is here. He's a pilot from Georgetown. Michael, welcome. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Good evening. Gentlemen, do you believe that unions have a role in today's society? And based on your answer, do you believe that government should enact more legislation or regulations directed towards unions?
Mr. Bonham, you have a minute?
Unions. I am a card-carrying union member. I have been for many years. To see the government have the ability to go into a private sector company and say how you can or cannot deal with your workers, deal with your employer, I find that a stretch on the power of our government. When you are not breaking the law, when you are running private sector company with private sector dollars, you should have the right to decide how you perform your businesses. Let the market determine whether unions are valued or not. But I want to go back to remembering when we passed this right to work law in 58 and we repealed it in 64. I would stand up and repeal the right to work law.
All right. Mr. Pence, 1 minute.
There's no question that unions have made an enormous contribution to the life of our nation. My grandfather, who was an Irish immigrant, was a member of the Bus Drivers Union in Chicago, Illinois, for about 40 years. And throughout our history, unions have played a critical role in advancing the well-being and safety of workers, particularly the abuses in the late 19th century of children in the workplace. But I do believe that Hoosiers have the right to work under the terms and conditions of their own choosing. I supported the efforts by the Daniels administration and leaders in the Indiana General Assembly to make Indiana a right-to-work state. First and foremost, because I truly believe in individual freedom and that people ought not to be required to join a union as a condition of their employment. But I also believe that it's going to help create jobs in Indiana. It's already gotten a lot of people talking about Indiana and businesses large and small, and I think right to work is going to be a winner for creating jobs in the Hoosier State for years to come.
Okay, John Gregg, 1 minute.
Thank you. I think organized labor has a very significant role in our society. I think right to work was wrong. I think it's going to lead to lower paying jobs for everybody, and the type of jobs we attract, I don't want poverty level jobs in Indiana. $8, $10, $11 an hour jobs, you can't raise a family on that. It's because of organized labor that we've got the 40-hour work week. that we don't have child labor laws. It's because of organized labor that we've got retirement benefits and safe workplaces and workers' comp and unemployment comp. Organized labor definitely has a place, but it's an easy scapegoat. I've traveled the state and I've talked with steel workers in the north. I've talked with coal miners in the south. And the truth of the matter is, they're being discriminated against. And, you know, we don't do that. When I'm governor of Indiana, we're going to include all people.
All right, thank you. Let's reduce our rebuttal down a bit to get kind of back on track. So 20 seconds, okay. Mr. Bonham.
Okay. I believe in the right to work. I believe that people should be able to go to work. I've talked to many unions out there that are willing to open the door to that entry-level position. But I tell people, you know, I mean, I had, and I don't have a counter, so you've got to tell me when my time
okay,
is up.
Wrap it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Pence, 20 seconds.
I believe every Hoosier has the right to work under the terms and conditions of their own choosing. They ought not to be required to join a union as a condition of their employment. And let me say, in right-to-work states around the country, in many states, union participation is actually higher than here in Indiana.
Okay. John Gregg, 20 seconds.
You know, don't believe for one moment that right-to-work states have higher union participation. Congressman, you are sounding like yourself. I will have to say that. Say one thing, do another. You started out talking about how you felt about unions, but then you did mention you support right-to-work. Right to work is only going to bring in $10 and $11 an hour jobs. As governor, I'll target high-skilled, high-paid jobs.
All right, thank you. All right, now it's time for a final question. We'll give you 90 seconds on this one to answer the question and then to wrap up the debate from your perspective. The question is this. Could each of you explain to voters why you feel that you are the best candidate for governor? For instance, what skills and experience do you have that set you apart from the other candidates? Mike Pence, 90 seconds.
Well, Dennis, thank you again, and let me thank the Indiana Debate Commission for this wonderful opportunity to have a conversation about the future of this state. I'm a lifelong Hoosier. I've raised a family, got my education, built a business and had the chance to serve this state in our nation's capital. And when my wife and I thought through the decision about entering this race, we concluded that we were among the people uniquely qualified to take Indiana from good to great. And with that, let me just say, I really think this is no ordinary time in the life of our state. I'm running for governor because I think Indiana's on the verge of an era of growth and opportunity like no other in our lifetime. And if we produce the right leaders at every level, with the right ideas, like those included in our roadmap for Indiana, I believe Indiana will take our rightful place as the leading state in the Midwest and one of the fastest growing state economies in the United States of America. But again, it's going to take the right people, and that's what elections are all about, and that'll be your choice. And yours out here. But it's also going to take the right ideas. And we'll continue in the weeks ahead to run a campaign of ideas, offering a positive vision in our roadmap for Indiana for the people of Indiana. And I ask for your vote.
Okay, thank you. John Gregg, 90 seconds.
I've had real life experience in my 50 plus years. I know I don't look that old, but I have. And I can tell you, I am the one candidate that has experience in three crucial areas. I've created jobs starting as a young man. I've worked for two Fortune 500 companies, and I've led a university. I've also had experience in state government, where we did balance the budget, contrary to what you might think. And we balanced the budget, and we improved funding for education, and we cut taxes. We abolished the inventory tax, which helped retailers and farmers everywhere. So I've got a challenge I'd like to ask everybody out there in the audience, particularly those who say they're independent and those that I call Luger Republican, who feel that the party's been taken over by the Tea Party extremist. If you're an ideologue and you see everything on a political spectrum as left or right, if you're an extremist, I'm not your candidate. I can live with it. We just disagree. But to those Luger Republicans and independents, if you see ideas as merely good or bad, right or wrong, look beyond that party record, look beyond that party label, look beyond the rhetoric, and you'll see that I'm the one who would best serve Indiana as governor. And I, too, ask for your support to be the next governor of the state of Indiana.
Thank you. Mr. Bonham, since I missed up on the timing for you, it's probably only fitting that you get the last word. You get 90 seconds.
Great. Thank you. Yes, you know, I stand up here not the career politician. I stand up here as that person that has put hundreds of people to work and taught them how to do that, has created multiple companies for myself and others that are still up and running, has shown how we take the government out of charities and out of our entitlement systems and continue the entitlement programs on by saving dollars and saving lives. I have said for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, gosh, of campaigning, last year, solid. If we want to change, we're going to have to elect a change. If we're happy with the status quo, then stay with your status quo. But I don't know that we are very happy. I know that I hear a lot of the politicians saying, we're doing better than our neighbors. Well, that's good. And I hear even in my mentoring program sometimes my young men say that. That doesn't mean you're doing as good as you can. If you want to change, I'm saying I will give us that change. I am not the career politician. I am not out to line my own pocket. I am not out to get fame and fortune. I'm out to empower Indiana, bring some common sense back, and make Indiana strong.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bonham. We'll see the three candidates a week from tonight on the campus of the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, 7 o'clock on the 17th. Before that, we'll have our first debate in the race for U.S. Senate. And that's going to be Monday, October 15th, 7 o'clock from the studios of WFYI in Indianapolis. Thanks again to WFYI, our other broadcast partners, WTHR, WRTV. And also thanks to the Zionsville Community Schools, the Performing Arts Center, wonderful hosts. Appreciate the volunteers and the Indiana Debate Commission of our affiliate organizations. Do your part, vote next month. And again, thanks to all of you. Good night from Zionsville, Indiana.